Sing Out magazine was founded over 60 years ago by a group of folks who loved roots music. Today it's a vital and entertaining resource for anyone who loves folk music the world over. As in the past, thousands of people turn to Sing Out to read about and learn from the artists who play the music. This is the Sing Out radio magazine. This is the Sing Out radio magazine, and I'm your host, Tom Druckenmiller. Spring has finally arrived in my part of the country, and that means the baseball season has begun once again. They just started peewee baseball practice at the school across the street, little munchkins getting their first taste of the game. Our theme music is the Star Spangled Banner, and we'll hear two different renditions. We just heard John McCutcheon from his recording Sermon on the Mound on Apple Songs Records. When I was a kid, we didn't have many organized teams, but each neighborhood had its own team. There was a seemingly endless supply of boys anxious to play. We were all baby boomer kids with bats, gloves, and balls. There were lots of vacant lots and a supply of wood at a local memorial company, so we were able to build backstops and even a few benches. My field was a lot which prohibited any hits to right field. The neighbors who owned the land were not anxious to have their yards and gardens trampled by boys playing ball all day. Thus, I became a pull hitter. This week, we'll listen to some great tunes dedicated to the national pastime, and we'll open with Dr. John and Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Baseball tunes on this edition of the Sing Out radio magazine.
Take me out to the ball. Follow home.
The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And then, when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake. And the former was a Lulu and the latter was a cake. So upon the stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted, and they saw what had occurred, there was Johnny safe at second, and Flynn a-hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more, there rose a lusty yell. It rambled through the valley, it rattled in the dell, it knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, no stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it, in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches black with people there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone in the stand. And it's likely they'd have killed him, had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two." "Fraud!" cried the maddened thousands, and the echo answered, "Fraud!" But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
That song by Janis Ian, the one where she complains about not getting chosen for the basketball team. Remember, for those whose names are never called when choosing sides for basketball? I would have written about that, except she done it first. 'Cause when you're 5'2", okay, 5'1½", and everybody else in the whole gym class is 5'3" and even taller, it hurts. Truth is, I hadn't thought about that for years, and then a recent phone call rekindled all those fears. A softball game, Robin said, and you're invited. Softball, great, that's my game. Why, softball's practically my middle name. I'll be right over, I said, sounding excited. Even though I can't throw, I can't hit, I can't run, I admit, I can't catch, I can't pitch. In softball, I haven't found my niche. But I don't let details get my way. Team sports, that's what I loves to play. So I got dressed, I got my sneakers tied, made it to the park in time for choosing sides. Pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. Pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. Glove? Yeah, I own a glove, but I didn't bring it because it's being repaired. But I can always borrow from the other team. Pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. This part goes on for quite a while, because 20 people showed up to play, and they picked 10 to a side. So as the ranks of the unchosen were depleted and the ranks of the chosen swelled, and I was still standing there, I tried to act really casual, you know, looked down at the ground, looked up at the sky, noticed clouds were rolling in, and a wind had kicked up off the river, a bad sign. And well, deja vu, I was the last one chosen. Even after Her Highness Felicity Rosen, they put me in the field so far out and to the right, I was practically out of sight. But everybody said I had a real good day. I didn't make any errors, I didn't make any plays. You see, the ball never actually came out my way, and I figured the afternoon is gonna end this way. Coming up to bat was a whole different kind of humbling experience. I took one swing and missed, which was no surprise. I took another swing and missed. That was no surprise. Then I practiced strategy. I let one go by. It was called a ball. And I had a proud moment, which didn't last long, because then the pitcher threw one. I just couldn't resist. I swung, and I actually hit it. But it was a pathetic little dribbler right back to the mound, and the pitcher threw it over to first base, and I was out, which again is no surprise. But as I was walking to the bench to pick up my glove, the captain of the other team said to the captain of my team, "Hey, it's okay. She doesn't know how to play, so we won't count her outs." And I turned around and I said, "No, wait a minute. I want my outs to count. I want you to count my outs," which made me instantly unpopular with my whole team. So I said, "Oh, I get it. Don't count my outs. That's good strategy, too. It makes me feel so special. Thank you very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you." Well, eventually I resumed my place in the outfield and continued watching the dandelions grow and blossom and turn into puffs and blow away in the chilly wind. Watched the clouds above me spelling doom in the sky. It wasn't long before I began to question my worth as a human being and my reason for living. And then top of the seventh, two on, two out, a crack of the bat, a mighty clout. My whole team turned and cringed to see that speeding ball heading vaguely toward me. I ran as fast as I could. I said a prayer. I stuck out my glove. The ball landed in there. No one could believe it on either team. They hooped and hollered, they stomped and screamed, and even total strangers watching clapped and cheered, aware that God had performed a miracle here. I was carried to the bench, I was handed a beer, and then the clouds broke apart and the sun reappeared. Well, I'm exaggerating about the sun coming out, but it felt like it did in my heart because I wanted to live again. By the way, we lost that game, 17-3. But I considered it a moral victory. And Janice, Ian, wherever you might be, take heart. There's hope for you, because there's hope for me.
Oh, take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts, I'll buy you Cracker Jacks. As long as you count my outs when I come up to bat. Oh, now it's root, 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 root for both teams. Win or lose or win, we're all the same. Oh, won't you please take me out to the old ball.
We're listening to tunes about baseball this week on the Sing Out Radio Magazine, and that, of course, was Christine Lavin and Ballad of a Ball Game. Many of the tunes we're going to be playing this year in our baseball program come from a series of recording called Diamond Cuts, and that came from Triple Play, a third compilation of baseball songs, Christine Lavin. And before that, we heard from Bob Costas, who truly loves baseball. He would rather be a broadcaster for baseball than anything else. And we heard Casey at the Bat from Bob Costas from Diamond Cuts Volume 2. And we let off that set with Dr. John and Take Me Out to the Ball Game from the classic soundtrack to Baseball, a film by Ken Burns. That's on Elektra Nonesuch Records. If you've heard my previous baseball programs, you probably know that I'm a huge Philadelphia Phillies fan. I was with them back in 64 when they blew the pennant, and with them again in 1980 when they won the World Series. And we're going to listen to a few tunes in this next set that have to do with the Phillies, although this first one really isn't about the ball team. It's a tune called Philadelphia Phillies, spelled F-I-L-L-I-E-S. And here's Del Reeves on the Sing Out Radio Magazine.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking about those Philadelphia Phillies, and some may think I'm talking about baseball, but I'm talking about the ones that wear them dresses oh so pretty, and the way they swing should be against the law. There's a lot of dangerous curves in that beautiful city, oh, but you never see no warning signs. And if you want to get right down to the nitty-gritty, oh, you can bat a thousand every time. I met a Yankee in New York, and I loved an angel out in L.A. But those Philadelphia Phillies tore my mind apart, and this giant's leaving Frisco today. There's some nice-looking twins up in Minnesota, and Atlanta's got a brave girl or two. And I cuddled a cubby in old Chicago, but I Philadelphia, I'm coming back to you. I met a Yankee in New York, and I loved an angel out in L.A. But those Philadelphia Phillies tore my mind apart, and this giant's leaving Frisco today. I'm sitting here thinking about those Philadelphia Phillies, and some may think I'm talking about baseball. I'm talking about the ones that wear them hot pants oh so pretty, and the way they swing should be against the law. There's some nice-looking twins up in Minnesota, and Atlanta's got a brave girl or two. And there's nice-looking legs in Cincinnati, but a Philadelphia, I'm coming back to you.
Me and you, we never booed Richie Allen. Never understood why people did. He had a homer every time he stepped up to the plate. That's what I remember as a kid. Richie in the field out there by first base, the target of some mighty foul words. With his shoes, he'd scrawl between the pitches. Ooh, great big letters in the dirt. Philly fans, they've been known to get nasty. When Joe must go, they'll run him out of town. I've seen Santa get hit by a snowball, and then get hit again when he was down. Gaffer, booed Richie Allen. Even if he did sometimes strike out, I was too young to read the papers, to know what all that booing was about. That big collapse of 64, it was ugly. They blew a lead of 6 in 1/2 games with 12 to play. Some might say the fans were justifiably angry. World Series tickets printed up in vain. Printed up in vain. Philly fans, they've been known to get nasty. When Joe must go, they'll run him out of town. I've seen Santa get hit by a snowball and then get hit again when he was down. So going back to old County Mac Stadium, teaching me the rules of the game. Root, root, rooted for the home team. And those other people, they should have been ashamed. This was before the days of $1 million contracts, and before the days of the artificial grass. He stood a bit outside the lines, which made him fair game for those times. 'Cause Richie Allen, he never kissed a white man's ass. Me and you, we never booed Richie Allen. Now we'd pound our mitts and we'd yell we want a hit. How could they call a guy a bum after he just hit a home run? Didn't make any sense to a kid. Well, I since found out all of these years later. Now I know a lot more than I did. If back then you knew, Daddy, while those other people booed, thanks for letting me have my heroes as a kid.
A is for Alex, the great Alexander. More goose eggs he pitched than a popular gander. B is for Bresnahan, back of the plate. The Cubs were his love, and McGraw was his hate. C is for Cobb, who grew spikes, not corn, and made all the basemen wish they weren't born. D is for Dean, the grammatical diz. When they asked who's the tops, said correctly, I is. E is for Evers, his jaw in advance, never afraid to tinker with chance. F is for Fordham and Frankie and Frisch. I wish he were back with the Giants, I wish. G is for Gehrig, the pride of the stadium. His record pure gold, his courage pure radium. H is for Hornsby. When pitching to Raj, the pitcher would pitch, then the pitcher would dodge. I is for me, not a hard-sitting man, but an outstanding all-time incurable fan. J is for Johnson. The big train in his prime was so fast he could throw 3 strikes at a time. K is for Keeler. As fresh as green paint, the fustest and mostest to hit where they ain't. L is Lajoie, whom Clevelanders love, Napoleon himself with glue in his glove. M is for Matty, who carried a charm in the form of an extra brain in his arm. N is for Newsom, Bobo's favorite kin. If you asked how he's here, he tucked himself in. O is for Ott of the restless right foot. When he leaned on the pellet stayed put. P is for Plank, the arm of the A's. When he tangled with Maddie, games lasted for days. Q is Don Quixote, Cornelius Mack. Neither Yankees nor years can halt his attack. R is for Ruth. To tell you the truth, there's no more to be said. Just R is for Ruth. S is for Speaker, swift center field tender. When the ball saw him coming, it yelled, "I surrender." T is for Terry, the giant from Memphis, whose 400 average you can't overemphasize. U would be Ubble if Carl were a Cockney. We say Hubble in baseball, like football in Rockney. V is for Vance, the Dodgers' own Dazzy. None of his rival could throw as fast as he. W, Wagner, the bow-legged beauty. Short was closed to all traffic with Honus on duty. X is the first of two X's in Fox, who was right behind Ruth with his powerful socks. Y is for Young, the magnificent sigh. People batted against him, but I never knew why. Z is for Zenith, the summit of fame. These men are up there. These men are the game.
Thousands of us had come to say goodbye and pay their last respects. And this tough town really loved you. I saw grown men who wept. Bats and spikes and flowers made a shrine around your casket, and I signed in the guest book as the line filed past it. Hey, whitey man, I miss you. When I listen to the Phillies, and there's Harry going on without you. Thank you.
This is the Sing Out Radio Magazine. If you want more information about the magazine, it's easy. Just call 1-888-SING-OUT or check us out on the web at singout.org. You can also listen to the show as a podcast. This is episode 1716. And remember, we're also available on iTunes. This is the Sing Out Radio Magazine, and I'm your host, Tom Druckenmiller. Our theme music this week, which is the Star-Spangled Banner, comes from two different sources. We just heard Norman and Nancy Blake from Back Home in Sulphur Springs with Nancy playing the mandolin. That's on Plectrophone Records. And before that, we're listening to baseball tunes this week. We heard from Chuck Brodsky and Whitey and Harry all about the wonderful, wonderful duo of Phillies announcers. The time he wrote that, Harry Callis was still with us, but he's gone now too. Before that, we heard from Bob Edwards and Line Up for Yesterday, a poem written by Ogden Nash. Both of those are from Diamond Cut's Seventh Inning Stretch. Those Diamond Cut's recordings are on a label called Hungry for Music. And before that, we heard Chuck Brodsky once again with Letters in the Dirt, all about my very favorite Philly back when I was growing up, Richie Allen, later known, of course, as Dick Allen. And that's from Diamond Cut's Triple Play. And we let off that set with Del Reeves and Philadelphia Phillies from the collection Baseball's Greatest Hits, Let's Play 2 on Rhino Records. The band Honky Tonk Confidential used to be able to hear the Washington Nationals games from their home in Washington, D.C., back when they played at RFK Stadium. They got a brand new stadium now. I'm not sure if they can still hear the games, but they wrote a great tune all about the time when they could. It's a tune called That's Nats from the Honky Tonk Confidential on the Sing Out Radio Magazine.
That's right. with the sign that says no girls allowed. I'd break on in and climb up high, get the prettiest view of the town. And I think one day culture put me.
Vinny Bolakis steps up to the plate that we made from the side of an old orange crate. He stares hard at the pitcher who's supposed to be great, and he yells, "You can't throw anymore." Well, he should have said nothing. Now we don't have a prayer. When you're small, you say things to remind them you're there. So he tries to act cool as the ball trims his hair, and the guys call it low and inside. Back in the days when the bats were still wood, when we all were big hitters and the pitching was good, when we played 20 innings or as long as we could, and no one was keeping score. Well, the season's not over till you lose every game, or the infield's too muddy, from a whole month of rain. So he thinks to himself, please don't hit me again, as the pitcher winds up for one more. Keep an eye on it, Finny, don't you swing till he throws. Now you just need a single, if it's wild, let it go. Finny, let him pitch to you, you can stand on your toes. It's the last of the 12th, and we're down. Back in the days when the bats were still wood, when we all were big hitters and the pitching was good, when we played 20 innings or as long as we could, and no one was keeping score. Then he raises his head and chokes up on the bat. Well, the pitch is a slider, and it isn't so fast, so he swings and starts spinning like a top whirling back, and he nails it to deep center field. There was no one in center, there was no one in right, there was no one at second. They went home for the night. Run, Vinny, run, you sure tagged that one right, but no one was keeping score. Back in the days when the bats were still wood, when we all were big hitters and the pitching was good, when we played 20 innings or as long as we could, and no one was keeping score. Out in the middle of a weed-covered lot, where only slow grounders and the pop-ups get caught, we were all the game's heroes, we were all the big shots, when no one was keeping score. And no one was keeping score.
That was Larry Kaplan from his recording Furthermore. And it's pretty much the way the ball games were in my neighborhood. We played as long as we could. We played as long as it was light, or we played until we all had to go home. It's called Baseball, from Furthermore, from Larry Kaplan. That's on Folk Legacy Records. And before that, from Caroline Spence, we heard Softball, from her recording Spades and Roses. That's a new one from this year. And we let off that set with Honky Tonk Confidential. And that's Nats, all about one of the teams I dislike the most in the National League, the Washington Nationals. That's from the collection Diamond Cuts Center Field, Volume 8, on Hungry for Music. Here's the story of the Ballad of Three Finger Brown from Ray Lambiase on the Sing Out Radio Magazine.
Come gather in the dugout, leave the bats and balls behind. In life and baseball, a hero's hard to find. And that's why we still remember all across this town, and tell the story of Three Finger Brown. He was born in Indiana, where he lost part of his hand. But then he found a curveball that could strike out any man. After St. Louis, he was Chicago bound. The Cubs had a rookie named Three Finger Brown. After St. Louis, he was Chicago bound. Cubs had a rookie named Three Finger Brown. In 1908, the Giants, they had a fearsome night. They fought us to one final game, the season on the line. And they had Christy Mathewson to keep the Cubbies down. We gave the baseball to Three Finger Brown. But the gangsters, they had told him that his life was at stake, and if they won the ball game, it would be his last mistake. with their threats in his pocket, he walked onto the mound. And no man stood taller than
Three Finger Brown.
With their threats in his pocket, he walked onto the mound. And no man stood taller than
Three Finger Brown.
His curveball dipped and darted right through the strike zone drops. The Giants never had a chance. The Cubs wound up on top. He brought home the pennant, and then he brought home the crown. The pride of Chicago was
Three Finger Brown.
So if you're in a tough spot and the odds are looking grim, and your team needs a hero if they're gonna win, reach back for something extra and look into the crowd. 'Cause someone's watching named
Three Finger Brown.
He brought home the pennant, and then he brought home the crown. The pride of Chicago was
Three Finger Brown.
The pride of Chicago was
Three Finger Brown. Three Finger Brown. Three Finger Brown. Three.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying. In his midnight hour, the toll. Round his bed, his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. And on his head, they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. Told him it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. Told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me, that's the truth. I'd forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another. And soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis. But what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush them like so many paper beer cups? Year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year, till those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. So if you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem. And then a little na-na-na-na, hey, 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 goodbye. Make six bullpen pitchers carry my coffin. And six groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base. In all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody two bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. And when my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. And I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The Dying Man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, stop it, that's an awful shame. He whispered, don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame. He said, I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now. So that's just what I'm gonna do. He said, but you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs. So it's me that feels sorry for you. And he said, oh, play that Lonesome Losers tune. That's the one I like the best. Closed his eyes and slipped away. Well, Scotty, it was the Dying Cub fans' last request. So here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? The Cubbies still play in their ivy covered burial ground. When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free and the doormat of the National
Steve certainly was smiling last year when the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. A Dying Cub fan's last request from Steve Goodman. And before that, Harry Carey, the great Chicago Cubs broadcaster, and Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It's from a collection called Greatest Hits, Songs, and Live Calls That Rock Wrigley. And we let off that set with Ray Lambiase and the tune The Ballad of Three Finger Brown, the title track of his recording on Raytone Records. You've been listening to the Sing Out Radio Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed our baseball episode for this year. I've been your host, Tom Druckenmiller, and if you've enjoyed the program, you can get more information about the magazine by calling 1-888-SING-OUT or by checking us out on the web at singout.org. The Sing Out Radio Magazine is produced at the Little Cat Records Studios. Join me next time for another trip into the fascinating world of folk and roots music on the Sing Out Radio Magazine. This is episode 1716.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning, I'd sing it in the evening, all over this land. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out a warning, I'd sing out love